You're listening to the Common Descent Podcast. But we digress.
Hello, David.
Hello, Will.
And hello, listeners. Welcome to a bonus But We Digress that actually connects back to our last episode.
Yes, following off our discussion of speculative evolution.
Indeed. We got a lot of requests for speculative evolution. And tucked in with one of those requests by Liz Jackson on Twitter was to talk about speculative evolution and specifically the potentiality of mermaids.
Yes, a very popular topic.
Indeed. It was not something I felt I could squeeze in to last episode. That's just, there's too much meat there for us to just pop that in. We would have had to forego a lot of the other stuff. So we are doing it here. So this will be our first requested, but we digress. And yeah. I'm excited for it because I love this stuff.
Yes, let us talk about mermaids.
Indeed, we're going to jump right into it. Now, first and foremost, as it goes with any subject, let's introduce our topic of focus. What is a mermaid?
What is mermaid?
Yeah. How do mermaid? That's actually what we're going to talk about to this episode, more very specifically. But I'm sure most of you already know what a mermaid is. You've either seen the Disney movie or seen any place that has water features. There's most likely. Yes.
Yep. Any beach or, yep, or boat or lake.
There's mermaids usually somewhere. Mermaids are a very, very popular mythical creature. Been in a human culture for a long time. We're talking century, like well over 1,000 years. That mermaids have been in human stories. There are evidences of mer people all the way back to Mesopotamia.
Cool.
These are very much like other mythical creatures such as dragons, where they pop up in just about every major civilization on every major continent and country and culture. So this is not a rare thing. And dragons and giant serpents and lizards have done the same thing in human culture. So there's lots of those creatures that are very prolific and for some reason catch in our imagination seemingly.
Yeah, there's something very appealing, it seems, about the idea of a half human, half fish.
And half human, half other is a very popular thing in myth anyway. I mean, half this human, half goats or satyrs, and half human bulls, yeah, or minotaurs and centaurs and gorgons and all sorts of things where the body is split down the middle somewhere. And
yes, yes. Chimeras are a popular, mm-hmm, mythical focus.
So this is not, you know, unique to mermaids, but they've been around a long time. Some of the more recent accounts that are probably what more of our mythos is based on is going to start around the 1400s with sailors like Christopher Columbus having reports of mermaids and actually reporting that they were not as beautiful as he was told they would be, which makes us think that he was most likely seeing manatees.
Yeah, I was gonna say. He was like, wait a minute. I was hoping for something far more. I mean, I would date that mermaid, certainly.
I'm not saying...
There are no women on this ship. Yep. Certainly, I would lie with that mermaid, but...
you oversold it a bit, Jim. That's all I'm saying. But, and there's actually a connection there. The group that makes up the manatees and dugongs are the sirens.
Yes, Sirenia.
Sirenia. And so there's even a connection there back to the you know, old Greek sirens of aquatic women. There's a lot of connections to things. Now, whether manatees were the inspiration for manatees or for mermaids is debated. You know, it's not easy to pin down folklore to its origin because, mm-hmm, nobody writes it down when they first start telling the fisherman's tale. So it's hard to actually
There's
know.
There's no story that says we mistook this dugong for a mermaid.
Yep. I told my friends about this mermaid and then I look back, it was actually a manatee. Funny, yeah, story. We'll laugh about it later. No. You don't find those notes. But there are definitely key moments in history where the mermaid myth has really been bolstered. Some of them were by some very famous people. P.T. Barnum of the famous Barnum and Bailey Circus had, yeah, the Fiji mermaid. And this is a big one that you will, if you look up mermaid, this will be within, somewhere within the links that you'll be able to first click on, guaranteed, because the Fiji Mermaid is notorious. This is in the 19th century that P.D. Barnum announced he had, not alive, the body of a mermaid, a petrified mermaid for people to come see. And it was the torso of a taxidermied monkey sewed onto the tail of a fish.
Yep.
Pretty obviously so, if you knew what a monkey looked like. Not yes. everyone back then did. So Fiji Mermaid became famous. He was not the only one to do this. There was tons of charlatans, of carpetbaggers, as the term goes back then, making their own mermaid claims. And so mermaids started popping up all over. Hoaxes were rampant, and it fueled the myth. You know, it mermaids were on the brain. And this is not something that has gone away. Stuff like this still pops up. You can still find roadside barkers that have, look at the rat the size of a cat, and it's an otter or it's a nutria. The hoaxes continue. Even with mermaids, there are modern ones. Some of you may be familiar with a series of we call them mockumentaries, called Mermaids, The Body Found, and The New Evidence.
Yeah, it's coming to us from the ever-delightful Discovery Channel.
Oh, yes. These were two mockumentaries is what the terms they've been given. They were technically classified under docu-dramas or docu-fiction. And basically, mm-hmm. these were supposed to be hypothetical what-ifs to expand the mind. Very much like the ones we talked about in the Speculative Evolution episode, Alien Planet, Future is Wild, Dragons, yeah. Mystery Made Real. Those were, here is what the science behind these things would be if they existed. And that's what these were advertised as. What they were was fake military and government labs hiding mermaids and...
Yeah, actors as scientists and...
Fake yeah. iPhone clips of mermaids washed up on the beach and the hunt for the mermaid. And it was done up sensationally. And then they put a little tagline at the end. All the others put theirs at the beginning saying, now, this is not real, but if it were, let us imagine.
Right.
This one had a little blurb at the end that said, none of the facilities shown in this video supported the essence in this video.
Same thing they did with the Megalodon documentaries.
Same thing with the Megalodon documentaries. And the result is that many people mistook it for a truly factual educational program.
Yeah, because why wouldn't you if it was on what was, at least at the time, widely considered an educational channel?
Yes. And so
if these were on Animal Planet and Discovery.
Yeah. These were reputable sources for people to go to learn about the natural world. And we still, to this day, get questions about both Megalodon and mermaids.
Yep.
I've had not just kids, you know, many people may think, well, I'm sure kids got, I've had adults come to me and stand their ground in support of the evidence of the mermaids.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of confusion with this. And it's a very murky subject. One of the things that you will often hear come up, so I wanted to at least mention it. We're not going to dive into it here.
Yeah.
But I wanted to at least mention it because you will definitely hear about this if you go on your own Google expedition on mermaids, is something called the aquatic ape hypothesis.
Yeah, we mentioned this, I think, very briefly in episode 18.
I think so, yes.
I think.
This is a concept. It actually, the beginnings of it go back all the way to the 1870s when scientists first suggested that maybe some of the human features are reminiscent of an aquatic ancestry.
Yes.
Kind of just suggested. It was bolstered in the 1960s when the hypothesis was really kind of given form and worded out more explicitly. And basically, this is saying that things like our bipedal gait, our hairlessness, the slight webbing of our digits, mm-hmm. the pruning of our fingers, which some things have argued is to better hold things underwater.
Yeah.
These things, you know, being able to walk upright would help with wading, and webbing is obviousness. Hairlessness is reminiscent of things like dolphins and other aquatic mammals. So these series of things could potentially be due to an aquatic or semi-aquatic ancestry. And it's a very interesting thought, and it's a good thought experiment. It has not gotten support, so it is mostly just that.
Yeah, and when we've not gotten support, as in there's no evidence that agrees with this.
Exactly. We've not found anything that lines up with this.
And,
so.
We should stress that a little bit, because there are very ardent defenders of the aquatic ape hypothesis.
Yes, there are.
And it was one of those catchy ideas. It's a fascinating, like you said, thought experiment.
Well, I saw something that called it an umbrella hypothesis that very neatly gathered up everything under it. And so it seemed, and whenever we find those where it's like, oh my gosh, this answers everything, it's really hard not to go with it.
Yes. In this case, it answers everything hypothetically in the complete absence of evidence that this is a real thing that happened. But people who are big fans of mermaids have a habit of latching on to this hypothesis sometimes.
That's a very common practice within the cryptozoology culture, which we will very likely talk about in some future episode.
Indeed.
Oh, I'm so excited. But this is something that happens, is when science suggests something or reveals something that kind of is in line with a already existing mythical creature, people go, hey, that kind of sounds like that there mermaid.
And it can become wrapped up in the mythos.
And now it is feeding into as pseudo support.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that we'll touch on a little bit at the end, because this issue of a good idea without evidence is very important when you're discussing the existence of creatures such as mermaids.
Yes, yes.
But before we get to that, we want to talk about the focus of this episode is speculating how could a mermaid evolve. Is it possible? If so, how could it look like they do? And if not, how would they look?
Yeah.
And to answer the biggest question out of those is, could a human be aquatic? And if so, why haven't we? Is a really interesting one. The front end of that is, could we? Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that would stop humans from being aquatic.
Plenty of mammals have independently moved into the oceans. Cetaceans did it. Seals, sea lions, and walruses did it. At least once in that lineage. Otters have done it.
Yep.
There's lots of smaller animals that have become semi-aquatic.
Mm-hmm. You get things like hippos. I mean, you can have all different body shapes utilizing the water. So there's nothing stopping us except technology.
At this point, our technology is very much land-based.
And it's also kind of eliminated the need to adapt to our environments physically, at least not dramatically, such as becoming a convergent with a dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
If you can fish with a fishing pole, if you can dive with an air tank, if you can cross the ocean on a ship, why develop fins or large lungs or et cetera, et cetera? And so, I mean, a lot of those things are, there's no way for us to know that this is why. There could be lots of reasons we didn't become aquatic, but nowadays, there's not a lot of push to need to do that.
Yeah. And even before that, apes and primates in general are very much adapted for arboreal lifestyles.
Yes.
Which is kind of the opposite of the body shape that makes you good in a tree is not the same body shape that's going to make you good in the water.
Oh, and yeah.
So there'd be many steps of transition to get from one to the other.
We are quite pathetic swimmers. I often would ask kids that was my way to explain natural selection at the museum, is I would say, what if people lived in the water and they lived there their whole lives, and then you had a brother who had weird web feet and they were super different from you, but then a shark came around, and I said, all right, so are humans good swimmers? And the kids are usually like, yeah, because we think of things like Michael Phelps and racing the pool.
Yes.
And I go, compared to a dolphin. And they go, oh, no.
Not even close. No, no, no.
No, not even remotely. And then I would be like, yes. So if a shark showed up and you and your finned, your webbed-toed brother were swimming, who's going to get away? And the kids figure out pretty quickly the brother. And that's how we explain it. But we often forget that just because we have Olympians doesn't mean we're actually good at that. That's just the best among us.
We're not really built very good. All mammals can swim, pretty much.
Oh,
in fact, pretty much all animals are capable of moving in water. The planet is almost covered with it. It's a good thing to be able to do.
That's not kryptonite for many things. But there are some examples. So, could we? Yes. Why haven't we? It's probably not been a need for us to.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a glimmer of hope for you who wish to live under the sea. We mentioned it in a previous news article. There are a group of people known as the Bajau people in Southeast Asia that live on the islands there and fish on the reefs. Now, they do not fish with poles and nets. They actually dive down and collect off the reef.
Yeah.
And the recent study that we reported on that we discussed in our episode found that they actually have larger spleens and even genetic differences that aid them in being better at holding their breath for longer without getting poisoned by the buildup of CO2.
Yeah, the same way that there are people who have adapted to living in high altitudes, yes, and different environments, we can adapt to living under the water. So if any people are the closest we've gotten to mermaids.
And one of the big pushes for the Bajau is that they use a mask and some simple weights, so they don't have anything to help them hold their breath other than their lungs and their body.
Yeah.
So this is not quite aquatic people, but yeah, we're leaning towards semi-aquatic there. You're getting in that direction.
You could imagine, right? We're speculating. You could imagine a scenario where that habit and that community keeps doing that for generation after generation after generation, yes, and eventually could become rather adept. They're not going to be dolphins anytime soon.
Yeah, but if they were somehow isolated and they kept living the way they are, you might come back later and they might be even more refined to that lifestyle.
Yeah.
So if with that in mind, if we had a group of people who were adapting to living in the sea, would they end up looking like a mermaid? This is one of the fun questions whenever you're talking about mythological or movie monsters is, why would you evolve the traits that we have already drawn you having?
Yes. How would we get to this point we've already made up?
Yes. And so it's like having the end of a maze and having to create the maze to get there.
So would you end up as a human from the waist up,
mm-hmm,
aquatic from the waist down, possibly with seashells?
Yes, yes. that's optional. You know, some of the main features of our typical form of mermaid is that it's half fish, half human.
Yes.
And that's getting into the mythical side. That's, once again, that chimera. This is not an aquatic human. This is a fusion, amalgamation of animals we know, us and the fish.
Like P.T. Barnum's monstrosity, mm-hmm, literally combined two completely different groups.
So could that happen? Nah. That we're not getting half fish people. That's no matter what D&D and Star Trek and Star Wars make it, humans are not able to breed with anything just because.
Yes.
That's not how it works. That's not how it works. But could you get something that kind of looked like it? Maybe kind of. The features of a fishy kind of tail are not completely alien to mammals.
Yeah.
The first one that came to my mind when I was thinking about this is the scales, because that's a very fishy trait, but there are scaly mammals.
Sure, yeah, there are mammals that have features like that.
The pangolin. You could have, you know, cuticles. You could have armory scales. And so, I mean, you could get a scaly anatomy. I mean, Y could be for, you know, protection or other stuff like that.
Why you would only have it under your waist is a little bit of a strange question.
That divide gets harder and harder to justify when you're actually trying to figure out how it would develop.
But and fully aquatic mammals like dolphins do have, you know, their in them it's the tail. It is an actual tail that has been modified into that fishtail shape, which humans would be hard pressed to do since we are tailless.
That would be a major throw in the reverse of how we've been developing our tail. Well,
dolphins lost their hind legs and highly developed their tail, and we did the exact opposite.
Yes. So that might be a little tricky. We'll go into alternative options in a second. One that I thought was kind of a fun idea is because mermaids are often shown with like fins, not fleshy flippers like a dolphin, but with actual ray fins, those thin,
like a fish,
see-through. Yeah. And we do see kind of stuff like that when it comes to bats. I mean, it's not nearly as pretty to think about our toes extending into these rays and our skin stretching across them into these webbing.
These patagia.
These bat-like wings on our feet that we use to swim with. I'm sure that's not quite as romantic an image for you to put on a shirt or on a poster, but it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, like an extension of webbing.
Yes. And so a lot of these features are not impossible, like mammal-wise. So those are all things we see in the mammal kingdom.
Well, and indeed, if you look at pinnipeds, you know, a sea lion, the tail, that quote, tail, right? The swimmy part in the back of a sea lion is its feet.
Indeed it is.
That's feet that... So if you've ever been a person, your best impression of a mermaid is to put your legs together and you know, fan your feet out to the sides. That's basically what sea lions do.
And that's typically how mermaids are portrayed. And so mermaids always have this kind of weird feature with how they're portrayed is we call that set bottom half the tail. That's the mermaid tail. But then when we always show them, they're always kneeling and sitting and side saddling with as if their tail is their knees and legs, because in our minds, it's still a person. But it's and so it's kind of a crossing of the anatomy. But that's why we have things like the mermaid fins that you can get where you put both your feet in and swim that way. The one thing that mermaids are always shown doing that it's not really in the mammal wheelhouse yet, at least, is breathing underwater.
Yes, just completely no air required.
Yeah, that's not something any mammal has achieved.
Yes.
There are
and certainly animals that have achieved it that are not gilled aren't active often while doing it.
Yes.
Like turtles can hibernate underwater for months, but they're not swimming around.
Nope. That's also they're breathing through their cloaca, their butt.
Their butt breathing.
I describe it to the kids as a reverse fart, and that's always
fun. Very nice.
But it's not impossible for terrestrial animals to live underwater. It's just not efficient unless you have gills.
Yes.
So, not impossible. I mean, who's to know what the future of evolution holds? But that would be a lot of evolution to go from efficient air-breathing lungs to efficient water-breathing gills.
Yes. So they probably still have to surface.
Yes.
At the very least.
Now, with that... because that leads nicely into the next category of, we talked about how would you get them to look the way they typically do. Now, this is the part I'm really excited for. What would they more likely look like?
Yeah, so assuming you had the right selective pressure to, we have to swim all the time. So we're given this powerful tail slash back legs.
For some reason, water levels rise dramatically. You can imagine whatever scenario you want.
Come up with some sort of... inventive,
get creative, but some reason there's lots of water,
but we are still presumably using tools and such, so we've kept our human hands. Right, we're swimming with our back legs, we're manipulating with our human hands, everything else about us is for some reason the same. But what would it look like?
And we already have touched on a few of those. Your seals and sea lions are probably pretty good candidates, because it's not likely we're going to redevelop our tail. That's a lot of development, and it would be a waste of the legs. That's a lot of work.
We're not going to lose the legs and redevelop that. That's a whole lot of reverse engineering.
So we most likely would develop our legs into swimming things, and there's kind of two routes to go with this. The seal sea lion route is to shorten up the legs and bring it down to your trunk to make them a better paddle. Instead of having these big, long, gangly things that aren't creating a lot of power, you shorten them, you make them wide and flat, and you make your spine flexible so that you can pump up and down like a dolphin's tail.
Yes.
There is, and this is not something that we've seen aquatic mammals do, but it is something to be noted, because it also shares a name with the mermaids, is a condition known as sirenomelia. Which is also known as mermaid syndrome.
Ah, an actual disorder that people can be born with.
An actual disorder. Very, very rare. It's like 1 in 60,000 to 100,000 births estimated. And it is a medical condition that is a developmental disorder where At times, infants can be born with their legs partially or completely fused.
Yes.
And so they have what we draw as mermaid tails. You know, when you look at their x-ray, this is typically fatal condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even with surgery, there are surgeries that have been happened. Not always. We'll share a link. There are links. There are instances of individuals who have survived this, but
yeah.
This is not a condition you can just adjust to. This is a very serious misalignment of your lower region, and so it usually affects not just the legs but the lower portion of the abdomen.
Yeah, and it should be noted that not only would this, of course, make it difficult to walk, but our legs are not actually made for swimming. Mm-mm. So it's not like you could just put a person like this in a tank and, like, all right, live like a mermaid. This isn't, like, automatic, you can now live like a mermaid.
This is not X-Men style,
you know, yes,
quote-unquote evolution. But I thought it was worth mentioning, one, it's called mermaid syndrome, but of also... course. Features like this do pop up in evolution where you see what would be a disfiguring or developmental issue or disorder, mm-hmm. or something like that can sometimes be the trigger for a adaptation or speciation when it happens just right. It happens to an individual where it's not enough to cause the problems, but it's enough to give a potential benefit. You know, like sickle cell anemia has benefits, but it also has drawbacks without the right circumstance and things like that.
Well, and this would be a lot like so every now and then in humans, people are born with fused chromosomes.
Yes.
And it doesn't really, in a lot of cases, it doesn't really affect anything. It just means your chromosome number 10 and 11 or something are stuck together.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point early in human evolution, we know that happened and caught on across the entire population. Which is why we have one less chromosome pair than other apes. Because somewhere in our ancestry, this feature that we still see today, cropping up every now and then, became widespread in a population, and then that spread to all of modern day humans. So, you know, a misformation of something can sometimes catch on throughout a population.
Yes. So basically this is to say, it would not be impossible to get the quote-unquote leg tail,
yes,
of the mermaids we picture. It's just not as likely as us going stubby legs and having more of a seal body.
At least based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah, and so that's... So if we're going with that one as more likely, I'm going to add up our conclusion so that we can have our image at the end.
Yes.
If anyone draws fan art out there, please, oh please.
Oh my goodness, yes, yes.
Now, another one, and this is a big one, is... One of the main features of most mermaids is long, luxurious, flowing hair.
Yes, it is. Ariel has beautiful hair. King Triton had beautiful hair. You know, to reduce drag. Wait.
Yeah. And speaking of someone with a big old beard, nah.
No, and me as someone now who has a ton of hair, yeah, no. Not great for water.
The first time I dove into a pool after I grew my beard, it felt like my face had hit a wall. you can ask my brother because he was there. The next 10 minutes was me just moving my face through the water and being like, oh.
I have two ideas for this, and I'm curious to know what you're about to say.
So typically the two things you see aquatic mammals do is they either go with short, thick fur for insulation, mm-hmm. like an otter. Yeah, where it's really thick and dense. It keeps the water off the body, traps a layer of air. And even other animals like sea lions are furred, seals are furred, but it's short and it's dense.
Yes.
Or you have rubbery, slick skin like a dolphin.
You have blubber.
You have blubbery skin.
Like a walrus or a whale.
Now, I don't know if any of you have looked in the mirror lately, but most of us are leaning one way when it comes to being a furred mammal.
There's some blubber in our future if we're evolving into mermaids.
We'd probably be blubbery and kind of think of like a beluga whale where it's kind of rubbery and, you know, squishy and rubbery.
Yep.
Just nice squeaky.
I was going to say that the benefit of being blubbery or hairy is insulation in large part. If we were trying to get the hair, I could see it showing up more as like a mane.
Yeah. That we could like a male patch. Sea lions kind of have where that's
yeah.
that densely furred area around the neck.
So a patch of long hair going back, you know, to protect the neck or, or... Now, honestly, if the back is furry and you're aquatic, I don't see why your chest wouldn't also be super hairy. So, you know, that we could just be furry all over. Or, I was also going to say, there aren't there spiders that trap bubbles?
Yes, there are. Yeah, the...
We could just get, like, especially mermaids could have beards that trap bubbles and they can breathe longer underwater.
Yes! Oh, yes, a little beard breathing mask.
Yep, well, like natural, I keep putting my hand in front of my mouth and I'm sure that sounds weird on the audio, but like a little natural rebreathers. Our beard, our beard hair would trap bubbles.
Absolutely.
So naturally, in this case, all humans would develop beards.
Yes. No, I mean, I was about to say, ladies, your facial hair would develop quite rapidly.
Yes. Join us.
Yep. And be distinguished. Absolutely. So kind of your options, most likely, at least as far as mammals show us today, is that you're either going to be kind of fuzzy like a sea lion or blubbery like a seal. And it could be depending on where we these aquatic humans developed. If we developed in the Arctic, blubber might be a more apt. If we develop someplace very sunny, fur could be a very good sun repellent.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the only two reasons those two things could happen. Those were just the first two that popped in my mind. But it's either of these are pretty possible. Sure. You know, there are some furry people. It's not hard for us to get our fur back.
this is true.
But if I had to lean one, I'd go with blubbery, rubbery people.
Yeah, I would probably go blubbery. I want blubbery, but with the beard scuba mask.
Oh, yes.
Let's get the best.
We joke about me filter, like using my beard like a net, and now this could actually happen.
There you go. We could, yeah, you could catch
filter
food.
Feed.
Oh, now we're getting off track.
off the beard.
Catching some for later.
Come, young ones, nourish yourself.
That's how these human mermaids in the future, Homo aquaticus, would feed their young. They'd hold on to the beard while you swam around, and they just feed the little bits out of your beard. And breathe the bubbles.
Pick the algae out.
Yep.
Now, one of the other cool things that I brought up, just because it's a feature that is kind of down the middle for aquatic mammals, is blowhole, no blowhole.
Where would our nose go?
The question of the century.
Yes.
Which side do you fall on?
To blowhole or not to blowhole? Yes, cetaceans have blowholes. Yeah. Dugongs do not. Yep.
Yeah, and... most of your carnivorans that have gone aquatic,
your pinnipeds,
otters,
yeah.
Yep, the pinnipeds, the seals, and all of those just have a snout. Man, yep. Their skull looks really not that different from like a dog or a bear. So, I mean, otters do, but they're mustelids and they're weird.
I would imagine we'd at least flatten out the snout or push it forward a little bit so we could poke it up above the water.
Mm-hmm. That is something that we would need kind of more of a snorkel, because right now this is real inconvenient. We would have to breathe on our backs, which could become a thing. We might be more active at the surface on our backs, like a sea otter that floats that way.
Cracking clams on our bellies.
Yep. And so, I mean, it could be very well that maybe we're social at the surface and functional underwater, and we float on the back where we can...
Holding hands with our mates.
Yes.
And eating food out of each other's beards. Barking at each other. Yeah. We would communicate like Tusken Raiders.
Yes.
We'd get up on the surface and hold up clams.
Yes. Now there is the argument to be made that that you could get humans that went completely aquatic and went flippers all over, and we would just be these seal people.
Yes. Well, it'd be like we mentioned these in the evolution episode, the speculative evolution episode, the mer from Primeval.
Yes. Which had a very kind of in between what we're describing and a full seal, where they had arms that they could swipe at stuff with and push themselves up, but they didn't have their fingers were now completely webbed and they couldn't really manipulate stuff the way we can.
Yeah.
And so it'd be very interesting. I wonder if we would retain societies the same kind of way, not like the Lost City of Atlanta style, but
continue to function.
Yeah, would we have to adjust to a different lifestyle? You know, does the ocean promote the kind of cultures that we've created on land.
Yeah. Would we be more conscientious about environmental impacts?
The land would just be covered in garbage.
Yeah, that would be our dumping ground. But like, just if go we to the beach in and the chuck ocean, it. Like, we'd notice acidification real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we'd be like, guys, my bones are falling apart. Can we fix this?
This is getting kind of rough. Well,
this also makes me think, because another thing that happens when you go from land to the ocean, elsewhere in evolution, is you also have to change around a ton of, like, logistical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, animals that move from land into the ocean, their eyes have to adjust to seeing in a different environment. The ears restructure. Your respiratory system and circulatory system can change to help maintain heat flow in different ways. Like, our faces would change dramatically, I think.
And if we were being deep divers, and if we were being under the water for any time, we're probably going to get denser bones and thicker That's bones
very
to
common.
Weigh us down. So there'd be a lot of things. It would not look like a human at glance, most likely.
Yeah, our diet would change a lot, too.
It would, which would probably majorly change our teeth.
Yes, it would. Yeah, absolutely. And perhaps the way we forage for food. Yeah, we would, like, how to survive down there would natural selection would quickly start favoring other adaptations.
And that, once again, makes me, in my mind, when I think of an evolutionary mermaid, my mind tends to lean more toward manatee than it does dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
And just because that, to me, works better with the manipulative hands of being slow moving and foraging through stuff and picking through rocks and things and just floating along and stuff. That's just where my mind tends to go for.
Yeah.
Because we would not start out as the fast ones in the water.
This is true.
So it makes sense that we would stay. Some of us might eventually get onto that fast, but I think the majority of humans would be much slower and settling into areas, you know, conquering a lagoon and feeding there and then maybe migrating to another place and then, you know, conquering there. We would. But I do wonder, would we be more herbivorous or continue to be heavy hunters?
Well, I imagine it's probably harder to farm
underwater. I think so.
But I was going to say, going along with what you were saying, given the level of technological know-how we have now, or even if you rewound the clock a few hundred years, I don't think we would be selected for being particularly good hunters because we are already exceptionally good foragers and trappers. Yep. And like, I feel like a lot of our society, we do the same thing we do now. We have like enclosed reefs where we just grew food and collected it from there.
Much like the Bajau people do, where they have floating villages. They float above a reef and then they forage there. We would just not need the village part.
Yeah.
And just have little kennels probably underwater, little corrals where we could go in and
absolutely,
you know, be now, away from stuff.
Here's a big question. If this all happened and we evolved into mer people, would we have aquatic dogs?
Yes.
Or would we find a different group of animals? I bet we would evolve dogs like otters.
Yeah.
And they would follow us in for the same reason that there are dogs that are also adapted to living in Tibetan high altitude. Like, when we adapted, they adapted too, because they were like, we got a great thing going on here. Let's not get left behind.
We are very much the mentality. It's like, well, looks like we have to go back to the sea, and you're coming with me, Spot.
But Spot be like, you're going to keep giving me food and shelter and medicine, right? I'm there with you. So we would have like otter. Otters are the closest thing to dogs today that are aquatic.
Yeah.
Mustelids. I guess otters and then the pinnipeds.
Yep. Those two are going to be in the same. They're both in the caniforms.
So they'd be like sea lions. We'd have like pet sea lion. That would be awesome.
The I've seen it made before that when someone realized the relationship between sea lions and the rest of carnivora, that they realized, oh, wait, so sea lions are mer dogs. That's a mermaid dog.
Yes.
that's exactly what that. Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Yep. Cats would leave on land. Cats wouldn't have any of it. We wouldn't want to leave them on land, but it would happen. They'd be like,
well, that this was good for a while.
This is where we part ways.
We'll see you, humans. It's been fun. We enjoyed our time on the internet.
Or perhaps more likely in our speculative evolutionary scenario, what would happen is the cats would say, get in there and bring us fish. And then all this evolution would happen for us to feed our feline overlords up on the land.
There we go. There we go. All right. I like our universe we've established.
This is pretty cool. The land is dominated by future cats.
Yep.
The ocean is all humans.
Very cool. Now, one of the final questions, and this one is not about how could they or if they could or the dynamics of evolving a mermaid, but is something that some people may be wondering when listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about this subject very obviously from the point of view that there are not mermaids.
Yes.
Which raises the question, yes, but how do you know there aren't mermaids?
And if you're not wondering this, dear listener, then you may have encountered someone recently or encounter someone in the future who is wondering this. This is a common question because so many people like their cryptids and like their speculative evolution ideas.
Yeah, and it's a good question scientifically. Like, you need to be able to answer, how do you know something isn't, even if you, like, if it's something you can't
prove a negative.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was. It's how do you explain the fact that you can't prove a negative, and how does that not then support the alternative?
Yes.
And that's a very common conversation for anyone who deals with any of these kind of subjects.
Especially among children, as we end up working with children very often.
Yes. And it's that, but how do you know? How do you know? You know, we have been, you know, conditioned as a culture that the way to support a thing is to show evidence.
Yes.
Show, put it in my hand,
mm-hmm.
your evidence that there are not mermaids.
Yes.
You know, which you can't do. I can't give you the thing that shows us there's not mermaids because there's not a thing there for me to have evidence from.
Yes.
If mermaids don't exist, then they're not going to leave any evidence one way or the other.
Yep.
So, and this is where we get in. I found a really good quote by Copy from The Introduction to Logic in 1953 that I liked. And it said, in some circumstances, it can be safely assumed that if a certain event had occurred, evidence of it could be discovered by qualified investigators. In such circumstances, it is perfectly reasonable to take the absence of proof of its occurrence as positive proof of its non-occurrence.
So he's saying, if you have thoroughly enough investigated something and have still not found evidence, you have a very good support there, even though your support is the lack of something, that this thing is not there.
Yes. If you are told that in the next room over from you, there is a $100 bill, and you tear that room apart looking for the $100 bill, and you take as much time as you want looking for that $100 bill, and you never find a $100 bill, most likely I was lying.
Yes.
You don't have any evidence I was lying, because you still, who knows? I could still be like, oh no, you just haven't found it yet.
Well, now the trick with mermaids, of course, is that the response, of course, mm-hmm. is, but the ocean is huge and
yes,
mysterious, and we haven't thoroughly investigated everything in the ocean.
And that is a correct statement when you take into consideration that usually that is referring to the deep ocean.
Yes.
That is, this is not the surface. We've been over across the surface a whole bunch. That's not to say it's still easy to find stuff. It's a big, big place out there in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been on the water for centuries now. The deep ocean is the part that is hard to get to. The pressure down there makes it much more difficult to reach than space.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, every time we go down there, we find something new. We found new species every single expedition we go down there.
Yeah, usually small species, it's worth noting.
That's the key, is that it's usually small. They're usually far in between, because down there it's like a desert.
Yes.
No sunlight's reaching down there, so you're not getting any plant growth. The only places where you have abundant nutrients are going to be the hydrothermal vents and places like that, which are like islands in the ocean. They are very far and few between, where they are a very high amount of life, and then as soon as you move away from it, very low.
It's barren.
And the only other thing that feeds it is the death from above, the things raining down, the animals that die and sink, the bits of fish scale in the bits of leftovers that miss from a predator's meal that sink down to the bottom, the oceanic snow.
Yes. And the other thing that I always like to point out is the, you know, we talk about we don't have the evidence of something.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen it in the ocean. Everything also has a fossil record.
Yes, it does.
Now, in the deep ocean, obviously, the very, very little fossil remnants are found down there. But that aquatic ape thing we were talking about, mm-hmm. there should have been a transition somewhere.
Yes.
If this lineage of apes had evolved. So we would also expect to potentially find evidence from the evolutionary past mm-hmm. of any particular group of creatures.
Now, everything we've said has counters to it. I'm sure if you go look it up online, you will find people who have an answer for everything we've brought up mm-hmm. as to why that is not necessarily a death sentence for the mermaids.
And they're not wrong. Once again, no. You can't prove a negative.
That's not how science works. But now we come to something called Occam's Razor, which says that if you have two options and one takes far fewer logical steps to reach and the other one takes more logical leaps to get to, the one with the fewer steps, the fewer leaps in logic, is most likely your correct answer.
Mm-hmm.
If we are looking at it and we go, well, we haven't ever found a mermaid. We've never found a fossil record of a mermaid. We've never seen a mermaid. We've never heard a mermaid. We've never gotten any good at... We've never found artifacts from a mermaid.
Yeah.
It's pretty likely there's not mermaids versus all of the things that would have to specifically happen for us to not find those things. The logic leans toward no mermaids.
Well, and the way that I like to put this conversation with what's mermaids or it's, you know, megalodon or whatever it is, you know, this mm-hmm. creature out in the world, is when you have no good evidence for it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of mermaids, there is no good evidence for mermaids. There's no, yes. like you all the things you said, no pictures, no carcasses, no mermaid poop, no nothing. A thing without any evidence is just as likely as any other thing without any evidence.
And that's the key thing.
At that point, you can start naming anything that could possibly be in the ocean, and it is just as likely. It's just like, well, they could be down there. It's like, yeah, well, Godzilla could be down there fighting Gypsy Danger. And it's like,
yep. But
we don't. They exist on the same level of positive proof.
It's that concept of just because someone says a thing and you can't hold something up to say here is why not, does not mean that thing is valid.
Yes.
It might be interesting. It might do to look into, you know, it's fine to go, all right, let's go look for mermaids. There's no harm in that.
Yeah.
But when you come back and you haven't found mermaids, you don't go out every year looking for mermaids. That's not how it works.
Most people don't go out every year looking for mermaids.
Yes. That's not how looking for the evidence works. Eventually you have to go, all right, well, all of our studies so far have shown nothing. And we have not seen anything else to make us think it's out there. Other than stories.
But well, it's also... like the aquatic ape hypothesis, as we touched on before, the reason mm-hmm. that it's not a credentialed hypothesis is because we have tons of evidence from the history of human evolution, yes. and none of it points in that direction.
Yeah.
So as of right now, until someone comes up with something crazy, we do not have evidence to suggest mermaids are here. And that goes with anything that, you know, is a yeah. common mythical idea or speculative idea that simply isn't as far as all of our evidence shows us.
And we'll dive into this subject at another time, I'm sure, because I love cryptozoology. So we will definitely discuss this at some point. But one of the things I want to leave this off by saying is it often is a lot of people get the feeling that scientists don't want these things to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so not true. I am here to do the PSA. That is so not true. If we actually found evidence for mermaids, I'd be freaking out. I'd be so happy.
If they found evidence
that comes up for Loch Ness Monster, I'm going to beat people up to get tickets.
That's what I, yeah, like,
yep.
If you find a plesiosaur living today, oh. We're the first ones in line. My goodness. Yep.
I'm on my way to Scotland now. And it...
There's going to be a lot of grant proposals all around the world from scientists.
We are just as big of fans of these concepts as just about anyone else. But we also acknowledge that just because we like it does not mean the science is to be ignored.
Yes. And so. whenever anybody comes forth and suggests, and I get it, especially when it comes from younger people, that that makes it less fun, or that's sad, or that's, you know, you've taken away the fun or the magic. My response is, to no fault of your own, if you think that the world is less fantastic or less fascinating for lack of mermaids or lack of whatever it is, you haven't explored the world enough yet.
Yep.
This is, is this not enough?
Yes.
Yes. Check out all the cool stuff we do have, because there's some stuff out there.
Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained? No, it's a wonderful world, and we're excited to explore it all the time.
And thinking about this stuff is tons of fun.
It's super fun. Yes, we're not bashing mermaids. We love mermaids. We just did a whole hour discussion about mermaids because it's fun.
If you want to hear more, eventually we can do what it would be like if other groups of animals became sentient mer people. Because that's a whole nother subject of actually fish or amphibian people.
Snake mermaids.
Yep.
Serpents. Merpins. There's,
we could definitely get into that. So you just let us know. We'll be here.
If you want us to do a whole bunch of speculative evolution stuff, let us know. That would be a lot of fun.
Oh, boy.
It's another mini-series idea.
Well, we're going to wrap this one, because this is a long, but this is a addition to the last episode, but it wasn't quite a 0.5. But
oh, yeah.
We hope you enjoyed. We enjoyed.
We did. And we have digressed.
Thank you again for the mermaid suggestion, Liz.
Yes, thank you. We will return you. We now return you to your regularly scheduled episode lists.
Ta-ta.
Goodbye.